Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman.
Hello, and welcome to the Autodidactic Podcast, Season 2, Episode 7. Once again, I'm a bit late this week, and I apologize for not getting this out on a Tuesday. It's just been difficult for me to find somewhere quiet to speak. This week I'm going to take a little bit of a break from exploring the autodidactics of the past and focus on a different topic, which is how to create a rigorous standard for self-learning. Now, this is because my friend and I had an argument, and he said that only people who learned at university had a rigorous education. Now, I countered this with the fact that although I have a degree, it's not in computer science, but I knew more about computing and programming as a self-taught programmer than my daughter with a degree in computer science. But he did make some very valid points about the lack of rigor most self-taught people have. So what is rigor in learning? Well, a combined definition includes the following most relevant terms: accurate, exact, exhaustive, meticulous, and precise. And the definition my friend was referring to mostly was exhaustive, because he felt that people who are self-taught aren't forced to learn difficult things and tend to gloss over things without confirming that they actually understand it. Also, he felt that people who self-study wander all over the place, quote unquote, without actually having a meticulous or exact goal to achieve. Now, some people mistakenly assume that rigor in education means making things more difficult, and others believe that it just means piling on more work. But rigor is not quantified by how much gets crammed in. It's measured by the depth of your understanding. Most people don't have rigor in their self-education simply because there isn't anyone looking over their shoulder. But if you want to learn a subject, then you need to add rigor to your method so that you're learning and working to your full potential. But how do you do that? Well, it's different for everyone. If you can't consistently negotiate rigorous tasks, either your understanding or thinking habits should be closely examined. And in this podcast, I want to explore ways that you can add some rigor to your learning. In Season 1, I stressed quite often that you should be testing yourself daily with quizzes which you build up from the previous session's study. Each day when studying, you need to generate a small quiz for the next session and then group these quizzes periodically into an examination. But there are a number of other things you can do to add rigor. And the first is use someone else's curriculum. It's the first and most easy way to add rigor if the subject you're studying is also taught at a university. You can use their curriculum. Many universities publish their curriculums. In university, the rule of thumb is you're supposed to devote twice as many hours outside the class as in class. To add this type of rigor to your own studies, you should have a self-study rule of thumb that 2/3 of the study time should be problem-solving or exercises, aka homework. Transfer your understanding. This means try and teach someone what you've learned. This requires you to apply the knowledge in a new and unfamiliar situation, which is an inherently rigorous process. But what if you don't have anyone to teach? Well, you can teach yourself by putting together a slide presentation showing what you've learned as if you're going to teach a course, and you might even consider doing YouTube videos teaching what you've learned. These would be on public display and would encourage you to ensure that what you're showing is correct and that you really do understand it. Mix multiple sources of information into a single source. So you typically have multiple sources of information available to you. Many textbooks, YouTube lectures, podcasts, etc. Take these multiple sources of input and perspectives and synthesize them together. This is similar to the exercise above, but here the output would be an essay showing the information and citing it. When you have to analyze, internalize, and reconcile multiple perspectives into a new position, perspective, or format, rigor is a requirement. Create your study periods with Bloom's taxonomy in mind. Bloom's taxonomy is a hierarchical classification of the different levels of thinking and should be applied when creating course objectives. Course objectives are just brief statements that describe what the student is expected to learn by the end of the course. The full power of learning objectives is realized when the learning objectives are explicitly stated. So the framework established by Bloom consisted of six major categories: knowledge, comprehension, application, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. Modern cognitive psychologists, curriculum theorists, and instructional researchers, testing and assessment specialists have revised this to a more action-orientated wording. Into a pyramid, with the bottom layer being remember, recall basic facts and concepts. Understand, be able to explain, describe, and classify these concepts. Apply, to use the information in new situations. Analyze, to draw connections between ideas, differentiate, and to contrast. Evaluate, which is to justify, argue, or defend a stance or decision biased on the information. And create, which is to produce an original work. So think about the exercises you can do which will force you to use the information and skills you're learning to complete Bloom's taxonomy. Find divergent perspectives in media. Find and use authors, philosophers, experts, and other thinkers who make authentic cases of their own that offer a contrasting perspective to something you may be studying. And try to reconcile these various viewpoints. Don't just stick to one input type. Use video, audio, textbooks, tweets, interviews to gain different perspectives. Require yourself to do design thinking and project-based learning. Build design thinking into your study. Be sure that elements of design thinking, creativity, and the tinker culture also are used to help you find success. So, for example, if you're learning programming, think about a large project that you can do along with the exercises you're doing in the textbook. Give yourself exercises in such things as identifying patterns, cause-effect analysis, and problem-solution thinking. A simple way to incentivize yourself to work on a project on the side while you're going through tutorials and classes is building something cool and interesting. It's a great way to trick yourself into learning. Complete an essay periodically. Essay questions are extremely effective for measuring complex learning. Opportunities for guessing are removed. You can truly measure what you understand. So schedule in numerous essays into your learning plan and activities for practice. Always pick good resources with exercises and do them. As a self-learner, it's critical to pick books with exercises and solutions. Pick resources with better exposition, motivation, and examples. You don't have the luxury of a lecturer who can fill in the blanks, and these expositions can be critical. Make sure to do all the exercises in the book, even if you think they're trivial and a waste of time. It forces you to apply what you've learned, and if it's easy, it's great. If it isn't easy, then it's giving you feedback on what you're lacking. Resources with work problems make a text more valuable and useful. Even students in class may spend a lot of time doing self-study. For self-study without worked problems, a book is only useful as a reference while working on problems from elsewhere. So try to find books with a lot of examples, problems, and projects for you to work through. Challenge yourself. As you look to develop rigor in your study, make sure you're providing relevant challenges that you need to rise and meet. It's not about just getting it done, but seeing how far you can go and how much you can improve. Have a lesson plan. In episode 11, Study Plan Creation for Self-Learners, I covered a lot of information about how to create a study plan for yourself, and it included three phases: initial assessment of level, resource gathering, and study scheduling. And in episode 12, season 1, in episode 12 of season 1, how to evaluate resources for study, I covered how to evaluate resources you can use. But in hindsight, I can see that one of the things lacking is a method for developing a lesson plan. I assumed you'd be able to take the lesson plan from the book or resource you're using, but my friend convinced me otherwise. Let's quickly look at how to develop a lesson plan for your study periods. The basic study plan template includes four basic phases. 1. A challenging objective for the lesson. 2. Instruction and presentation of information. 3. Practice and production. And 4. Verification of the objectives. Writing out objectives for each lesson can be formal, or it can just be a single sentence on a post-it note. But you need to know the goal if you're going to know if you've reached it or not. And don't write just a simple objective, like explain merge sort algorithm. Instead, do something like explain merge sort algorithm in contrast to other algorithms such as a bubble sort or an insert sort. Complete the instruction and presentation of data. Now, this might simply be reading the textbook chapter or watching the video, but relate this to your learning objective. Practice and production is where you should be spending most of your time. Remember, the self-study rule of thumb was 2/3 of your study time doing exercises and practicing the skill. So make sure to think about this when doing your lesson plan and use Bloom's taxonomy when you're thinking about exercises and practice. And finally, verification is taking a quiz or a test or writing an essay. In many podcasts in Season 1, I recommended the creation of a quiz from the material you're learning today. And here you create a simple quiz and take it before the next study session to make sure you understood the lesson. Otherwise, you should repeat the relevant portions, which you missed out on in the quiz. Exercises and practice can also help to verify and confirm that you know and understand what you've studied. Spending a little time creating a lesson plan before you start with a challenging objective will add rigor to your study times. The need to look forward in a book at the section headings, etc., in order to define your objectives will help you focus on the study materials. I mentioned this in Season 1, Episode 7's Textbook Study Methods, when I discussed various methods of reviewing textbook material. These methods were the P2R to reading and studying system, the SQ3R study system, and the SRUNR reading and studying system. So please re-listen or reread these podcasts if you need more information. I put transcripts of my podcasts on my website, so they're available to read as well as to listen to. Well, that's all for this week. I hope you enjoy the show. Please give a rating on whatever platform you're listening to, and please share the podcast with friends and family who might be interested. Also, please feel free to email me at rick@autodidactic.info or leave feedback on the website autodidactic.info.
Thank you for listening to the Autodidactic Podcast with your host, Rick Dearman. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider giving a donation via PayPal. Thank you very much, and see you again next time.